Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Meriwether and Tharp, your source for Georgia divorce. Find them online at theatlantadivorceteam.com.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I want to circle back off the top of the program to something that I briefly mentioned on yesterday's show. And listen, when it comes to talking about college football, you know, I'm going to get some things right, may get some things wrong. Hopefully, though, the one thing I've established a little bit of a reputation for is I'm at the very least honest, right? I try to share my honest feelings with all of you about what I think is going to unfold. And, you know, obviously, this is a show for fans. We're going to talk about this from the standpoint of if Georgia wins, that's a really good thing. And as someone who wants to see Georgia win, as someone who, you know, hopes for the best for the Dogs this season, admittedly, and I said this yesterday, I'm a little concerned about the current state of the Georgia offense. I wonder when it comes to being best team in the country, best team in the SEC, just how well Georgia's progressing on that side of the ball to be able to get that done. So for someone like me who has some legitimate, concerns, maybe concerns is the better overall word, yesterday was a really good day because in the midst of thinking about what Georgia still needs to develop, what Georgia might not have, there was a really fun reminder of what Georgia does have for the upcoming season. This team still has a pretty impressive crop of running backs, probably less proven than maybe any point in time in recent years to start a year in terms of what Georgia has the running back spot. But as far as possibilities go of what might be total number of players who could potentially contribute, this is a pretty impressive list, and if you want to feel good about something for Georgia, I think you feel good about the running back position. One of the really great reminders of this was the fact that we got a chance to hear yesterday from Georgia running backs coach Del McGee, a guy that we don't hear from a ton. I think I interviewed McGee a couple of years ago around one of the bowl games or something. You typically get a chance to do that, but for the most part, we don't talk to McGee very much. We don't hear from McGee very much, but we did yesterday. He's done a great job, obviously, in coaching up Georgia running backs the last couple of seasons. He's a big reason why guys like Kendall Milton came to Georgia. And when it comes to getting this group ready for 2020, a group that I think includes Zamir White in a big way, that I think includes James Cook in a big way, that has room for guys like Kendall Milton, Kenny McIntosh, Deshaun Edwards to potentially contribute there as well, I think it's important to note that the arrow is still pointing up for the Georgia Bulldogs at the running back position. In fact, yesterday, it was nice to hear Del McGee talk a little bit about that group and his own positive expectations for the upcoming season. So here is McGee on the running backs.
I feel like all of our guys are putting forth great effort in the classroom as well as on the field. Definitely have two older guys in Zamir and James Cook, who's provided a lot of leadership to the room, and they bring a lot of experience. And they're definitely two guys that complement one another. And from a standpoint of understanding the offense and learning the offense the fastest, they've kind of propel themselves in that regard. We're still in the process of developing and seeing where all the guys are going to fit. So nothing has been decided yet, but I really like our room. Like I say, dealing with COVID, everyone has to be ready to play because we never know what's going to happen. And that's my process, is making sure that all our guys are ready to run the football, protect the quarterback when that number's called.
I mean, that clip gets me excited there because of the names that get mentioned in particular. Zamir White, who's a huge fan favorite, and James Cook, the other name that you heard Del McGee mention on his own, which is one of those guys that a lot of folks have been waiting for him to come into his wings for quite some time. And if we kind of stipulate for a moment that we kind of already expected Zamir White to probably have a pretty good year, let me focus in on James Cook on this for a moment. To hear McGee mention him as one of the veterans in this room now, one of the leaders in this room, to go along with Zamir White, I just think that sort of gets my mind wandering a bit about just how good James Cook could be for this upcoming season. You know, one of the things that sometimes people who watch us on video or interact with me on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily will kind of poke and prod me about a bit is they think I haven't always given James Cook enough credit for the kind of player he has the potential to be at Georgia. And admittedly, that's probably true. I probably have not given him enough credit over the years. Statistically, he's actually had a better career than maybe some people realize. I think one of the things that I've kind of looked at with Cook over the years, though, is this is a guy that's a running back that could almost be a wide receiver. You know, he's one of those guys that's just a little bit different than a traditional running back might be. And it's almost like the old adage of, if you've got two quarterbacks, do you really have one quarterback? And as a player like this, If you could potentially play two positions, does that mean you're really filling out one position as well as you possibly could? And I will just be completely honest that for a while I have kind of been concerned that maybe James Cook might be caught as kind of a player without a position to Georgia. But when you hear Dale McGee say those things there, you really don't feel that way as much anymore. I think that when you think of James Cook going into 2020, you see some photos where it seems like he's in really good shape, you know, adding some muscle. I think that when you think about James Cook for 2020, you now think of him as a traditional tailback to go alongside Zamir White. Yes, Cook can throw the ball, and yes, he seems like the kind of athlete that someone like Todd Monken ought to be able to exploit against opposing defenses, but the way you make your bucks at the NFL level is by proving you can get those tough, hard yards between the tackles, and that, I'm obviously reading a lot into this, but that is something that maybe James Cook's just more ready to do when he's kind of put there alongside Zamir White on the mantle of leadership for this group. Later on in that same discussion, Dale McGee went into a little bit more detail about exactly what that leadership means from White, from Cook, those guys that have the most experience, how it is they're trying to pass that down to the rest of the Georgia running backs. And once again, as someone who's a little concerned about the Georgia offense overall, the impact of White and Cook starts to make me feel a little bit more optimistic. Let me let you hear more from Dale McGee.
Just more so from a vocal standpoint, they're taking more of a leadership role with our younger guys. They're kind of mimicking what they got when they were a freshman, when Swift and Elijah Holyfield were the older guys in the room. So they're kind of taking the young guys under their wing, showing them how to take care of their bodies, how to prepare and be the best you can be the next day. Of course, film studies concern, just all the little tidbits and how to be successful on an everyday basis. And I think they also provide help to our young guys and going to class and not being a list guy and just being an overall really, really good student athlete.
If you've ever been a coach, if you've ever been a teacher, you know that one of the things that can be a great tactic to use sometimes is to get your student trying to teach someone else. If they can teach a concept, that just means they understand it even better because that's sort of like the last level of understanding. So for someone like Zamir White, someone like James Cook, who probably haven't fully come onto their own on the field yet, the fact they're already kind of imparting some wisdom to running backs who are a little, you know, farther behind them in terms of experience, I just think that speaks to the level of comfort that White and Cook may be feeling in this Georgia offense this year, which, I mean, boy, sky's the limit when it comes to the possibilities of that. All right, put a pin in that for a moment. Let me shift gears here. There has also been some talk recently about another Georgia running back, some online chatter about the possibility that a Georgia freshman running back Kendall Milton may be dealing with a hamstring, something like that. There was a photograph the other day that his father, Chris Milton, shared on Twitter where he was just kind of joking about, you know, his height in comparison to Kendall Milton. But it was clearly after Georgia practice, I believe it was the scrimmage this past Saturday. And in the photo, and I'll show it to you live on video here, Milton appears to be wearing a black jersey. Some people wonder maybe that's a black non-contact jersey, kind of only adding to the fuel that possibly Kendall Milton is dealing with some kind of injury right now. Dale McGee was asked yesterday directly by a reporter, what is the current status of Kendall Milton? And McGee gave us a bit of an answer, although I'm not really quite sure how to take this. Here's Dale McGee on Kendall Milton's injury.
Is Kendall Milton dealing with a hamstring? How long might he be sidelined?
No, he's not out. He's just he's been doing everything. He's just been for the development of just making sure we get the correct reps in. He has missed certain parts of practice.
So I'm not really quite sure how to take what McGee says there, but if it is true that Milton has been slowed down some during these summer practices because of some sort of injury, be it a hamstring or whatever else, I mean, that's a guy that I have big expectations for the upcoming season. But if he's dealing with anything that's slowing down his progress right now before the season begins, it's probably enough for me to kind of slide a few more chips onto the table for a guy like James Cook having an even bigger role in this offense, Zamir White having an even bigger role in this offense, if Milton is really slowed down in any way at all, then there's only so much you can do if you're dealing with a hamstring, which is one of the things that he's been rumored to deal with there. So I'm not really quite sure what to take from what McGee has to say. Maybe take it at face value that he is fine, and that's certainly good news because I think that Georgia needs a big contribution from Milton. But maybe it's even more of a reason to kind of lean on those veterans a little earlier in the year. So with all of that said, potentially, hopefully, maybe some good news eventually on Milton's health. Big praise for for Zamir White, big praise for James Cook. I think there is justifiable reasons to feel really pretty good about the Georgia running back situation. However, and this is the thing that I can't quite escape. If you want to go back and look a year ago, explosive runs for Georgia, you know, those runs of 12 or more yards, far fewer of those last year than there were in 2018 when Georgia was just incredible at that. Some of that may be attributed to downfield blocking, things like that. But one way or another, this Georgia offense last season just didn't have as much of that. And I think one of the things that you think about as a big reason for that was the passing game just did not strike fear in the hearts of opponents. Opposing defenses not thinking much about Georgia's passing game, stacking the box to stop the run a lot more, and the absence of those big-time running plays existed, which obviously kind of leads you into a scenario here for 2020. You don't want to hear the frustration in Kirby Smart's voice when he talks about that topic this season the way that you might have last year. In fact, let me go back to November of a year ago, around the time that Georgia played Auburn. Kirby Smart asked about the kind of lack of explosive run, something that had been a hallmark for this Georgia offense. You can tell from the tone of Smart's voice that this was a topic he did not enjoy a season ago. Here's a quick reminder.
Some of that's the back end. Some of that's you don't create the angles when all the extra guys are in the box. You contribute to a lot of things. I contributed to good defense. I mean, you start looking at it, they got good football teams in our conference. And I mean, look at us defensively. You're not giving up a lot of explosive runs either. So across the board, it's tough to do that, and we're certainly looking, trying to find ways to create those advantageous situations. But I just know our conference is very defensive when it comes to rankings and statistics. There's a lot of good teams in it.
I mean, you hear the frustration, you understand why that is. Smart doesn't like talking about that topic, and he's right to say, hey, opposing defenses in the SEC make explosive runs hard to come by. But that excuse is not going to work in a year like 2020 in which, you know, it's time for Georgia to get over that hump. It's time for Georgia to truly, you know, be best in the SEC, truly compete for a national championship. And, you know, leaning on the guys we talked about off the top of this segment, Zamir White, James Cook, certainly makes that a possibility. But even really talented running backs like White and Cook can be taken away if opposing defenses don't have to worry about the Georgia passing attack. So the overall bottom line to this entire discussion is, yes, the Georgia running back group, the Georgia running back core, can be just as good as all of us hope it might be and expect that it could be. That can happen this season, but they're going to have some help. You hear the frustration in Smart's voice near the end of last year. Great running backs like DeAndre Swift in the NFL now, simply taken away sometimes by the fact that opposing defenses just didn't have too much to worry about beyond those Georgia running backs. So the Georgia running backs helping lead the way this year, absolutely a possibility, but they're going to need some help themselves as well to have as good a season as the expectations would suggest are possible. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you, and thanks for being with us today, live on video, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. We're on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and we are available as a podcast wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. Huge thanks for being with us here today. Thanks for making this a great start to, even though we're still a couple of weeks away from the start of the Georgia season, it still sort of feels like we're kind of getting into season mode here, and we appreciate all of you for making it great for us, and a huge thanks to our friends at Meriwether and Tharp for making the show possible today. You know, Meriwether and Tharp provides a valuable service to our community, and by community, I mean the folks who listen to Dog Nation Daily here each and every day. Divorce is just an unfortunate fact of life, and I hope that you find a way to avoid it, but, you know, in an audience the size of ours, as many people who watch and listen every single day, it is just a statistical fact that some of you right now probably have questions about the divorce process. Here's the good thing to know. If you have questions, many of you do, Meriwether and Tharp has answers when it comes to divorce because they are your source for Georgia divorce. There's institutional knowledge that's been gained by working through cases similar to yours, different from yours. Every case is obviously a little bit different, but they've been through these kinds of things thousands of times. And that expertise gives them a chance to be a strong advocate on your side, fighting for what's right for you, making you whole again when it comes to the relationship, your family, your finances, everything else. Meriwether and Tharp can do that for you. You got to find them online, though. It's theatlantadivorceteam.com. Theatlantadivorceteam.com. That'll get you in touch with Meriwether and Tharp. They are your source for Georgia divorce. It's Connor Riley coming up in just a few minutes here. We'll get more into the Del McGee talk about Zamir White, James Cook, the outlook for the Georgia running game for this upcoming season. We'll do a lot of that with Connor Riley here in just a bit. Before that, some pretty interesting recruiting stuff from Jeff Sintel as of late at DogNation.com. Before the Hedges, presented by Kroger last night, was a great show. Very, very provocative piece on five-star defensive lineman Mason Smith on the website yesterday. I believe there's a part two of that coming at dognation.com here today. There is a lot to unpack, as it certainly seems like right now Georgia is developing some real recruiting momentum. And it seems like, at least on the basis of Jeff Sintel's reporting, that five-star quarterback commit Brock Vandergriff, who, by the way, has a huge game this upcoming weekend. But it seems like Vandergriff is a big part of the momentum that Georgia's established. The very famous now gathering of commits and targets a few weeks ago that Vandergriff was right in the center of. Well, Brock joined, and I always want to think about like Paul Heyman saying, you know, Brock, every time I think about Brock Vandergriff. But nonetheless, Brock Vandergriff was a part of Before the Hedges presented by Kroger last night. And one of the things that he and Jeff Sintel got into was what Vandergriff's role was in bringing in Corey Foreman to Athens that day, bringing in Mason Smith to Athens that day, bringing in, you know, Xavien Sory and some of the guys, you know, who were here and were a part of that, Terry Arnold. How did Vandergriff view his own role in that? This is very interesting stuff. It's from Before the Hedges presented by Kroger last night. Jeff will be with us tomorrow to talk about it, but let me let you hear Brock Vandergriff right now.
I mean, it goes back to being genuine with guys. Just I reached out to a bunch of guys and see who wanted to come in, and that was the group we got, and it ended up being a heck of a group. I mean, so that picture that went around, I thought it was pretty funny. I mean, one of my best friends from Prince, he's now at Truett McConnell. He was helping me drive him around, because I mean, it's on me. Like, that's who's hosting it. So he was helping us drive them around, and like, we went and had dinner downtown, and it was a great time. Like, I think one of the waiters told us to calm down a little bit, because we were laughing so hard throughout the whole dinner, and it was a great night.
First of all, I can't have any Athens waiters telling five-star recruits to calm down. Those guys need to be able to stretch their legs and have a little bit of fun. Let's give them some leeway when it comes to that. But, you know, what Vandergriff describes there is the kind of thing that in life you either have or you don't. Have you ever tried to plan a dinner with some of your friends? I mean, there are some people who are just incapable of making plans. Not only can they not pick a restaurant, they can't agree to someone else's restaurant pick. They're literally just frozen when any kind of like logistics planning takes place whatsoever. So that's the kind of thing in life you just sort of have or you don't. Vandergriff at this young age kind of has that. It's probably one of the things that makes him a quarterback. That's typically one of the hallmarks of quarterbacks. They just have a little bit of organizational skills, a little bit of leadership type stuff, and Vandergriff clearly seems to be putting that on display, and the work that was done a couple of weeks ago seems to really matter. There's all kinds of chatter about Corey Foreman, the nation's number one prospect, possibly trending towards Georgia despite being in Louisiana this past week to a visit to Baton Rouge. Even some chatter about the fact that Georgia may be able to pull a guy like five-star defensive lineman Mason Smith out of the sportsman's paradise. Obviously, that's a very difficult thing to do. He's about 2 hours from Baton Rouge in his hometown, but you know, the visit that Mason Smith recently took to Athens may be being a part of that discussion. It's one of the reasons why Jeff's piece with Mason yesterday was so good at dognation.com. In it, and there's a lot to unpack, you should read it all for yourself, but one of the things that Mason Smith did confirm is that he absolutely expects to play his college ball with Foreman, the nation's number one prospect. In fact, let me show you a quick quote from Mason Smith on that. About Corey Foreman, he says, me and him in college is a definite thing. He and I have the same top three schools. We're looking at the same three schools very heavily. You can ask him this too. I am 100% sure that I'm going to play with him. Now, even with that said, these things have a way of kind of dissolving over time, just especially considering the geographic pull that Mason Smith may eventually feel, that Foreman may or may not feel. But for now, all you can do is take him at his word on that. It's one of the reasons why Vandergriff's impact on both Smith and Foreman a couple of weeks ago still stands as such, was so paramount in all of this. I mean, I just think for a while, we just didn't have the kind of recruiting storylines that we were used to. It was just kind of a barren wasteland of recruiting news. That's no longer true. And, you know, there's still a very good chance that Georgia doesn't get every single player it wants. We talked about Smile Mondin yesterday. Who knows where that stands at the moment? But Georgia is very much in the mix for the top prospects in the entire country right now, which is the kind of thing we've come to expect. And it, for me, it seems to be happening at the right time. We're going to get Connor Riley here coming up in just a moment. Before we get to that, let me remind you about my friends at Classic City Lager. This is just a great tasting, crisp, kind of, you know, lighter lager type beer. It's available in 6 and 12 pack cans. It is kind of an Athens original, you know, Classic City Lager. You can't say Athens any better than that. When it comes to our friends at Classic City Lager, it's a very easy drinking beer. You may be getting ready to watch NFL tonight. You may be watching some college football this upcoming weekend. getting together with some football. Classic City Lager just sort of takes that to the very next level. Also heading towards the upcoming season, whatever your tailgating situation looks like, or maybe for many of you, more likely a home gating situation. Whatever that is for you, Classic City Lager goes great with your upcoming football plans this upcoming season. If you want to find out more about this, check out this hashtag. It's hashtag good cold beer, because that's what Classic City Lager is. It's good cold beer. Find out more using the hashtag good cold beer. It's available all year long, 6 and 12 pack cans. Go to your local retailer, wherever you like to shop. You're going to find some Classic City Lager. Hope you check that out today. All right, it's a busy show for us. We are very long off the top here, but we'll keep it going. A lot more on the recruiting stuff, a little bit more on the Georgia running backs. Let's cover all the ground there is to cover. It's Connor Riley here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Merriweather and Tharp.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Well, say hello to Connor Riley here. Good stuff from him. He was a part of the Dale McGee press conference yesterday. He's written some stuff about that at DogNation.com. Very good. We'll get into that in a moment. I want to start with recruiting, though, kind of picking up where we were just a moment ago. And, you know, kind of remains to be seen how any of this plays out. The recruitment of Corey Foreman is going to be incredibly contested. I would say that Georgia is still a point spread underdog to win with a guy like Mason Smith, although the piece that Jeff Sintel has written at DogNation.com is quite enticing. You know, Smile Mondin, who even knows where that stands right now. So the point is, Georgia's not going to sweep the board with the targets that it wants, but man, it sure does feel good again for a Georgia fan to be talking about these kinds of big names in this kind of way. This feels very, very normal after kind of a long time of things not feeling very normal at all.
I've said this time and time again. With Kirby Smart at the helm, there's no need to worry about recruiting. Yes, they're, as you pointed out, they're probably not going to get all the guys that we've talked about at this point in the show. But he's shown time and time again that he's a great enough recruiter, and I mean the word great there, not just good, that he's able to figure things out and find a way to appeal to these recruits and convince them, even in the middle of a pandemic when it is largely considered not safe to do some of this stuff, fly across the country to check out Athens, to have an ambassador like Brock Vandegrift show them the city of Athens in a place where they potentially play college football and really sell what the Georgia program has to offer.
I want to talk more about Vandegrift in a moment, but you know, I read the quote from Jeff Sintel from Mason Smith a moment ago. I feel like, as kind of a, you know, microphone bloviator here, I've got a luxury that maybe Jeff Sintel doesn't quite have. He's a reporter. He has to stick to the facts. He has to be, you know, objective. And, you know, really, I think that in certain extent, he may have an obligation to treat every statement that he gets from his, you know, subjects as, you know, at face value. I can speculate a little bit more. And my speculation would be, even though Mason Smith says I am 100% going to play with Corey Foreman, for me, the actual true number is still something below 100%, whether it's 75%, 50%, whatever else. Mason Smith saying I'm 100% going to play college football with Corey Foreman. I respect Mason Smith. I think that Mason Smith gave some very, very intriguing answers to Jeff Sintel. Can't wait to read part two. I'm still not quite sure. I believe it's 100% likely that he and Corey Foreman play on the same college team together.
At the end of the day, both those guys have to do what is best for both of them. And I think it's telling that Corey Foreman did go to LSU last week. And I think it's also telling that both Smith and Foreman were together at Georgia, so maybe that is a little bit higher, but I certainly understand why one would be pessimistic about the idea of these two teaming up together, because anyone who's followed recruiting for longer than a year knows, hey, anytime guys are talking about a package deal, probably not going to happen. Now, there was one interesting tidbit that I sort of gleaned from reading the pages of the Dog Nation forum. Jeff Sintel, obviously writing about Mason Smith, one of the things he said in the forum was that he wasn't going to write about Mason Smith until it became sort of obvious or clear that he was actually legitimately becoming a Georgia target. And what I sort of mean by all that is, it's so obvious that he is, you know, LSU is the front runner there because of the ties to the program, him being from Louisiana, the fact that LSU hasn't missed on a five-star in-state prospect since 2014. Everyone always understood this was a very difficult pull for Georgia to make, but I think with where they sit right now, both with Smith and perhaps even more importantly with Foreman, if Georgia can convince Foreman that Georgia is the place for him, I think that's going to make things a lot easier in terms of potentially landing Mason Smith.
So here's a thought exercise, and I want to talk about Brock Vandegrift after that. As someone who'd love to see Georgia get both, but would really love to see Georgia at least get one, if you gave me right now the choice that Foreman and Smith will play together in college or won't play together in college, I guess I'd take the choice of they won't play together in college right now, because I personally, on the basis of reading the tea leaves, I think that Georgia's chances with Smith are legitimate, but I kind of view Georgia's chances with Foreman as better at the moment. So given the roll of the dice of, hey, I can, without knowing which school it is, I can have these guys playing together or I can have these guys playing separate. Given how I feel Georgia's chances are for Foreman in comparison to Smith, I guess I would choose the breakup of that package deal to give me a better chance at getting the one, which I think is just the easier pull for Georgia right now, which is probably Foreman. I know that's kind of a galaxy brain take, but that's kind of where I am at the moment.
Are you maybe projecting a little bit because you feel confident that Georgia can land Foreman, but they don't necessarily so much, you don't feel as confident they can land Smith, and that's sort of why you think they won't play together?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Or no, I'm saying if I had the choice of them not playing together, I might take it, because ultimately, I just feel like the gravitational pull in Louisiana is going to be so tough. Not to say that Georgia can't do it. I mean, last year, I mean, Cedric Von Prahn was an incredible prospect, and Georgia very easily went in there and brought out Van Prahn a year ago, not a five-star, but a top 50, top 60 type recruit. Mm-hmm. So it's not impossible for Georgia to go to Louisiana here. I truly don't believe that. But I do believe that Mason Smith is more difficult, just because right now there's just not a lot of geographical pull for Foreman because of how weird things are in California.
If I can put your feet to the fire here, you get to choose one of these two prospects that Georgia lands, regardless, and you're not going to get the other one. Which one do you choose? Based on preference.
I would have said Mason Smith up until about a week or so ago, but some of the stuff that I think was last Friday when Jeff Sintel was with us for Dog Nation Daily presented by Meriwether and Tharp, where he just really described the pass rushing abilities of Corey Foreman in a way that made me kind of lean back to him. There's always been something about Mason Smith as a player that I felt was really, really interesting, especially as he described to Jeff the possibility of kind of a three technique player, you know, Georgia's version of what, you know, maybe Brian Brzee might be for Clemson. I know there's some debate about how Mason Smith be used the next level. That made him a very interesting prospect for me. But if Corey Foreman's the pass rusher that people say that he could be, just dynamic off the edge like that, it'd be hard not to make him your first choice if you could only choose the one.
I would agree. I think I'd probably pick Foreman there. Georgia has a guy like Jalen Carter this past class to really make things better, and especially at the defensive line spot. I think they'd probably play a little bit of similar positions at the college level. There aren't a whole lot of dudes out there looking like Corey Foreman.
Yeah, Randy Hall says that, you know, it makes the Warren Sapp comparison. I mean, I guess that's a little bit of what he is, but certainly the way in which Mason Smith described himself yesterday in the first part of the Dog Nation article makes it seem like he sees himself a little different than a Warren Sapp type player.
Yeah, from my reading of it, he sees himself especially more at the next level, maybe like that Trayvon Walker role,
yeah,
in a way of
I
a guy that
too.
Can play inside on early downs, but then bump out to sort of the edge, pass rushing sort of situations in the five technique role. So I'll be interested to see what he is at the next level, whereas I think Foreman is pretty clearly your edge rusher. You know, I know Georgia, they might call him a jack or whatever, and they might try and play him off ball, but that guy's going to be a pass rusher and a dominant one, I think, at wherever he ends up.
I want to talk about Brock Vandegrift for a minute. He's got a huge game tomorrow night against Gunnar Stockton. This is the kind of thing that just makes high school football really fun, no matter what state you're in, Georgia in particular. I'll also say this. If it's possible, I like Brock Vandegrift way more than I even thought that I was going to. I thought his highlights last week were very impressive. I love the moxie, you know, the full interview with Jeff Sintel. This is a competent young man recruiting players that maybe he even doesn't even really know all that well, but finding a way to get to know them pretty quickly. He's got kind of a good salesman kind of edge to him a little bit. I think that Brock Vandegrift's a pretty interesting quarterback prospect for Georgia. Obviously, five-star quarterbacks are always going to get a lot of love. But I would say that Vandegrift right now is even a notch above just the typical love you'd give to any elite quarterback prospect. He seems like a very, very interesting young man.
Yeah. There's been some poo-pooing, so to say, of the competition he plays, sort of the single-A private level down there at Prince Avenue Christian, but when you have a guy this talented, and one thing you look at from quarterbacks and sort of how they've developed, one thing that they've put a lot of stock in is just them putting up big numbers as a high school senior. That's something Carson Beck didn't do last year, and I think that's a reason his ranking ultimately dropped to where it did. So with Vandegrift, like, sure, he's not playing against, you know, South Florida or even Metro Atlanta area recruits on a weekly basis, but the fact that he's going out there and just tearing it up, and I fully expect him tomorrow night in Rabun County when Jeff and I will be there on the scene to tear it up once again, that's to me the most encouraging thing, because he's now further removed from a leg injury he had a year ago, and he's still, we know so much about him, but it's still worth remembering he's still very young in terms of his football career and developing into who he is. So the more reps he gets and the better he continues to look is just a better and better sign of who Vandergriff is going to be as a quarterback.
I'm going to do more on this later on in the show, but some of the same stuff you just described there is some of the stuff that people have said about Jordan Burch a year ago at South Carolina, playing at a Columbia high school that was, you know, lesser competition, not sure how ready he'd be for the next level. His position coach at South Carolina has given him some really big compliments. I think when you're an elite talent, truly elite talent, who you're playing almost doesn't really matter. In other words, you know, for Burch a year ago, it wasn't dominating, you know, private schools in South Carolina that made him a five-star prospect. It's his own physical characteristics that made him that. I think that for Vandergriff, much the same way, that yes, it is lesser competition than some guys are going to be playing. And I think the overall level play in the state of Georgia is typically pretty high. But Vandergriff did not become an elite prospect because of what he did against, I'm not even going to disparage a, you know, private school.
You might be sending Charlie there one day. So.
Yeah, I'm not going to disparage any particular school here. But that's not what made Vandergriff a five-star. You know, I would say that you don't have to temper your enjoyment of his highlights because it may be coming against what you think of as a smaller school in the state.
Right, and he's a five-star because he tested really well, because he played very, very well at the Elite 11, better than a lot of other quarterbacks did that showed up there that had similarly high rankings. And I would just point out, of the freshmen that we've heard the most about this fall, from Georgia's standpoint, Justin Robinson and Tate Ratledge, in terms of turning heads and making plays, both of them were playing that same single-A private high school football a year ago. So maybe, while yes, it's not the greatest competition level, there is something about having a kid who's dominated at a lower level. He has the confidence that he can play there, even if maybe he shouldn't, but that irrational confidence, I think, as we're seeing with Robinson, Ratledge, and I ultimately believe Vandergriff as well, that irrational confidence is something that can really help you as you're making that transition to college football.
I think Robinson and Ratledge are very interesting comparisons, because I think you would hear a similar thing about both of them in the fact that Ratledge didn't take plays off. So in other words, he may be the best player in every field that he's on, but he was looking to dominate every single play. He wasn't resting on his laurels. And I think that Justin Robinson had a similar, I think, thing said about him, which was, he was always looking to win the play, even though just by skills alone, he was destined to win most of the plays that he was a part of. In other words, if you're a true elite competitor, you're going to find a way to be competitive on every single play and kind of define your own standard for what that competition is. You're not going to just settle for being the best player. You're going to try to be a dominant player. You're going to try to win every single rep. And I think you saw some of that from Vandergriff last week, even though, you know, it wasn't against the 85 Bears.
Right. And there's something to be said about knowing that you can go out and dominate and then consistently going out there on a rep by rep basis and doing it. You saw Ratledge do it. I think you saw Justin Robinson do it last year, and you're seeing Vandergriff again do it now. And I'm really excited to see how he matches up against Gunnar Stockton, because while, yes, Rayburn County is sort of a higher level in terms of the A, I believe they're a 3A school.
Yeah.
The talent level there might actually be pretty similar, and I think we're going to see a very interesting and very tight game tomorrow between Prince Avenue Christian and Rayburn County.
Let me shift gears, talk running backs for a moment. I am very, very high on James Cook right now, and that's not something our audience will point out. I've maybe always been. And
you're continually sleeping on him last year.
I've been criticized for being guilty of sleeping on him a bit. I'm not sleeping on him right now. I don't want to overpraise him, go too far the other way. But to hear Dale McGee, and some of this came from even a question you asked, to hear Dale McGee continually kind of pivoting back to the notion that James Cook is a veteran, a leader in this room now, I take that as great news. Some of the photos I've seen of James Cook so far this offseason, brief video clips that Georgia has shared. To me, this is not a tweener anymore. This is a tailback who's ready to prove that he can get hard yards. Because in the NFL, that's really what you get paid for. You know, it's good to be Alvin Kamara. It's good to be Christian McCaffrey. But you also need to be a guy that can run between the tackles as well. And I think that's what James Cook wants to prove this year, if I had to guess. As I said off the top of the show, they need help. Running backs alone is not going to be enough to make the Georgia offense national championship good, but I do feel pretty enthusiastic about what White and now James Cook can provide to this group this season.
I wrote about White and Cook this morning, and it's so weird now to think of them as they are in fact the oldest running backs in that room. They are the veterans now in that room, and the analogy that I used is that when they came in, they were sort of like puppies and they had huge paws, and you're like, there's some potential there to grow into really big dogs. And for a variety of reasons, they haven't necessarily done that yet. They've had both, I think, a lot of interesting adversity to overcome. And with James in particular, everyone has always compared him to his brother. This is the, in seeing him in some of the practice photos and the videos, this is the first time that I think physically he looks like his brother in terms of the size that he has and he needs to compete. We've shown highlights here of him from his freshman year. That is a totally different back from a physicality standpoint. One thing, Mike Griffith and I were talking about this yesterday after the McGee interview. George Pickens is obviously your number one. Are White and Cook right now your second and third most trusted offensive weapons on this Georgia team this year?
I might use a different word than trusted, but in terms of, hey, sight unseen, who am I throwing out there, ball in the hand, game on the line? Yeah, I would put White and Cook just behind you know, Pickens on that. Mm-hmm. The Blaylock injury obviously impacts that some, but yeah, I do think that you're now asking way more from White and Cook because, you know, Trey McKitty's banged up right now. Dominic Blaylock's not playing. I have some optimism about Kyaris Jackson and Demetrius Robertson, but, you know, frankly, James Cook probably has proven a little bit more in a Georgia uniform than they have. Cook's stats are better than people realize.
Yes, they are.
His explosive run percentage in particular a year ago was much better than people probably realize.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing with Cook last year wasn't an issue of his talent or him sort of not making plays. I think he was routinely put in a position to fail and to not make the most of his skill set and attributes. And I think this year, one of the things I'm most looking forward to is how does Todd Monken sort of maximize James Cook's skill set? Because it's not an easy thing to do, but I think there's a blueprint out there. You know, you loved talking about Joe Brady so much last year, and I've sort of praised Joe Burrow a lot, but I think, and I wrote about this last year, I have the receipts. The guy that really, I think, made that LSU offense into what it was, it wasn't just Burrow and his throws. It was Clyde Edwards-Helaire and the threat he presented both as a running back. He went over 1,000 yards last year, but also as a pass catcher, catching 55 passes out of the backfield. Obviously, I don't think James Cook is going to get to those same statistical benchmarks, especially in a 10-game season. But if he can fulfill a similar role there, and you can also work in Zamir White in that sort of area as well, if James Cook is following the Clyde Edwards-Helaire model, I think that's going to open up a lot of things for the rest of this Georgia offense.
So let me just finish on this topic with this, and then there's one more thing I wanted to ask about before we go. Are you in agreement with me, though, that people, I think, for a while thought that James Cook would finally come into his own once Georgia started treating him more like a, just to oversimplify things, more like a slot receiver? I think Cook comes into his own this year by fully growing into RBU-style tailback. James Cook's a running back on this team, I believe. Now, you can throw to him like you did Edwards-Helaire a year ago, but Edwards-Helaire also had 1,400 yards rushing for LSU. Right. I think that James Cook is a running back on this team this year.
The guy that I think you would look for him to be like is 2017 DeAndre Swift. Okay. I think that's the comparison there. Yes, he can do stuff in motion, out of the backfield, in slot receiver, but if he's making his best plays out of the backfield, sort of like Swift was, that's going to open up a lot of doors for this Georgia off. And that's what I think they need him to do.
The comparison I kind of want to make here is, maybe this is not a perfect one, but to me, I'm sort of hoping he's 2015 Sony Michel.
Fair enough.
When Chubb went down, you know, because there was probably some of the same kind of stuff said about Sony Michel in like 2014 of, oh, you know, he's one of these guys you want to get involved a lot of different ways. But with no Chubb in 2015, and this was not a great team in 2015, but with no Nick Chubb, you know, what would Sony go, 1,100 yards? Mm-hmm. A lot of that was between the tackles. He proved himself that he could be a tough runner. I love the idea of involving him, throwing the football, something I think that Georgia wants to do. But I think that James Cook is going to surprise some people this year by what he does between the tackles. And I'm saying that a lot just based on the fact that I think he looks good in photos.
Yeah, he's clearly physically bulked up, and he's gotten the time that he's needed in the weight room to become the physical back that his brother was. And the reason his brother was such an outstanding college and now NFL tailback, because he was ready to play from day one in that Florida State offense. And James Cook, a little bit smaller when he was coming in, and it's taken him some time to get to sort of that same level of seek that doubt.
I want to do this very quick. I have a theory, and maybe this is just a projection because this may be what Georgia does, but I'm thinking the rest of the SEC may be kind of this way as well. For those who care at all about gambling, when you start thinking about the early season SEC game, given the grind that's to come, given the challenge of having to play a better week-in, week-out opponent than you're used to playing for a full season, I think early in the year we could see underdogs and unders play a major, major role in what goes on. You know, Alabama, Missouri to begin the year, Georgia, Arkansas to begin the year. you know, some games are kind of already a toss up, like Tennessee, South Carolina. So in that particular case, I'm not talking about a game like that. But in games where you see a fairly sizable point spread, I'm not really quite sure how much teams are going to want to put their foot on the gas, just knowing that they've got to step back up and do it against even better competition the following week. We'll eventually see some blowouts in the SEC, but I believe that's going to come later in the season once the grind starts catching up with people. If you're looking to see Georgia beat Arkansas 42-0 on the road, I just don't think you're going to see it. You'll see Alabama in a similar situation against a Missouri, a Florida in a similar situation against an Ole Miss, and Florida's only about an 8-point favorite there, but you get what I'm saying. You know, these ideas, you're going to see these very impressive scores at the beginning of the season from Georgia, other SEC teams. I just don't think it's going to happen.
So I believe the line for Georgia-Arkansas is about 17, and that's still...
I've seen it at 24.
Okay, so it depends where you see it at. 24 probably feels right. 17 is obviously too low.
Seems low to me, yeah.
But the unders, I absolutely agree on. And obviously Georgia hit their under a lot last year in games because of the unfortunate way their offense was playing. But I think with this weird offseason and teams not necessarily being able to fully install their offenses to the manner to which they want to, I think defenses in general are going to have an easier time in the beginning of the season. And because of that, I think very specifically with Georgia, they are actually going to have an advantage at the beginning of the season because their defense is so far ahead of where I think a lot of other defenses will be. So while yes, everyone wants Georgia to win those games 42-14, I think you're going to see a lot more potentially 24-0 games to start the season for Georgia.
I think one of the things that coaches know that fans sometimes don't is I think a coach knows when he can't lose. I think he knows when he looks across the sideline, he sees the way that guys are matching up. We saw this with like BYU and Navy a little bit on Monday night, where it was obvious at the beginning that Navy couldn't beat BYU. They hadn't been practicing enough to get that done. BYU chose to kind of, you know, run the score up in that situation and get some style points. In the SEC, in the early going, the same situation, I think coaches are just going to be content to get a win, not risk turnovers. And then, you know, somewhere around week four, week five, when the grind really catches up to people, we may see some big scores at that point in time, some big blowouts from teams that just can't keep up with it anymore. But at the beginning of the season, I think this is a pretty conservative league, if I had to guess.
I think later in the season, you're going to see a pretty stark differences between the haves and the have-nots. And for Georgia, they have a whole lot of have-nots on the second half of their schedule. So the blowouts, I think, eventually do start to come for this Georgia team, given the talent advantage they have. And again, Kirby Smart is one of the best college coaches in the country. We don't say that enough because of what he hasn't done. But what he has done is shown that he can build a pretty great team and a very talented one. So early on in the season, I certainly agree with your point that it's going to be a little bit lower scoring and it's going to be a very, I think, contested more games than people realize.
I also think this very quick. You talk about the haves and the have-nots. I think at least one team in the SEC that thinks it's a have is going to find out that it's not. And I would say, given the chance to win more games against SEC competition, remember, for the most part, with the exception of about three teams in this league every single year, the rest of the SEC typically finds a way to win, you know, three SEC games at the least. I think that you may see a little bit more of a pack in the middle where some of the teams that we think of as bad, I think a couple of them may find a way to win a few more games than people think. It's going to be like one of those NFL situations where by the end of the year, there's a bunch of 8-8. You're going to see a lot of teams kind of hanging around that 5-5 number.
Right. Conversely, I think there might be a couple of teams like an LSU or an Auburn maybe where things don't go well right away and they end up trending towards that 5-5 mark, whereas originally you probably thought they were an 8-2 or a 7-3.
All right, Connor, thanks. Very good stuff. Appreciate it.
As always, it was a pleasure.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, I continue to be so fascinated by this. I just think that everything about the way we evaluate a season is different because it's SEC-only competition. It's not just, well, it's two fewer games. What is that, like 15% less of a season, somewhere around that? It's not just reducing the statistical benchmark. It's also saying you have to do it 10 times against SEC foes. As I said on yesterday's show, there is a very real scenario where Georgia wins a national championship this year, having to beat Alabama twice and Florida twice. And I'm just, you know, or Auburn twice. I'm just sort of spitballing ideas for what, you know, could come down in a situation like that. It's a season unlike we've ever heard. And yes, some of it kind of sucks. The ticket situation, frustrating for a lot of people. You know, I went online yesterday. I can't even find a place where Georgia, Arkansas tickets are even for sale right now. It's just a weird situation. UGA's not going to be there. But there's some other parts of this where it's just going to be It's going to be fascinating and fun, and I can't wait for a lot of it. And one of the things that's going to make it also really fun for us is back again this year, the Dog Nation postgame show is going to be at the UGA bookstore. I'm a huge fan of the UGA bookstore. It's been kind of a home away from home for us for a long time when we are in Athens. We've been up there on the second floor for the show, and we're back there again this year. I've actually got a shirt from the UGA bookstore on right now. I just love hanging out with those guys there and gals. They have done just so much to be hospitable to us over the years. And when you're getting ready for a game day yourself, whether it's going to be in a stadium somewhere or maybe sitting around at home, the apparel that you need for that, the UGA bookstore, also a great choice for that too. So you can stop by and see them. They're open 7 days a week in Athens, but they're also open 24/7 online. It's UGABookstore.com. UGABookstore.com, the place to kind of get loaded up on some UGA apparel if you want to for the upcoming year. And let's face it, we all want to. It's a great way to kind of get the season started. Also, we'll see you there for the Dog Nation postgame show coming up in just a few weeks' time. All right, I mentioned this with Connor Riley. Let me read this. And, you know, I guess you can take into this what you want. But Mike Peterson, who's the defensive end and the Buck linebacker coach there for South Carolina on Jordan Burch, the five-star signee, he was on Georgia's radar as a recruit for a while. Here's what he said this week about Burch. He says he has it all. He's fast. He's strong. The thing I probably like the most about him is he's really, really coachable. I can get on him. A lot of times those highly recruited guys, they come in and haven't been coached in high school. The coach hasn't really gotten on them. I'm able to get on him just like I get on the rest of the team. He accepts it and actually excels when I get on him a little more. So he loves Jordan Burch. He's giving him praise. Couple of thoughts here. One of the things that I think that South Carolina can be interesting at, and I do believe, you know, week one, South Carolina, Tennessee, Vegas kind of has that as a pick 'em. You know, this notion that Tennessee is a way better team than South Carolina or even a better team at all than the Vols, or I should say than the Gamecocks, I'm just not quite so sure that's true. I think that South Carolina has a chance to win that game. I think there's a chance that South Carolina can have a better record. I told you yesterday about the possibility that it's Colin Hill that emerges as the starter instead of Ryan Helinski. They're doing some unorthodox things in Columbia right now. But one of the ways in which the Gamecocks can be dangerous is on the defensive line. Zach Pickens is a recruit that everyone wanted. Gamecocks got him. Rick Sandage, as of yet, probably hasn't come into his own as a player. But if you watch and read Gamecocks message boards, they haven't given up on him yet. There's a chance that Sandage has a pretty good year. And now you talk about the possibility of a Jordan Burch, you know, potentially being a part of that mix. He's not a starter. I guess it's Kingsley Ngabari that's going to start over there at that defensive end spot. But Burch is potentially in the fold there. That's not a bad defensive line. Muschamp's typically pretty good defensively. Javon Kinlaw's not there anymore. But defensive line-wise, they may not be all that bad. Now, something that I guess is bad that has been criticized just a little bit here. So there's this statue that they're apparently building in Columbia right outside Williams-Brice Stadium. It's a little controversial. The best that I can tell is the controversy surrounding the statue. I think we have a photo, a few photos of this if you're watching a video. So these are like, I guess, parts of the Gamecock that are going to be built together here. I think most of the controversy around this has to do with the double entendre of South Carolina's mascot's name. I guess the only thing that I'll say is, first of all, I mean, this is their I like statues. This is their mascot. Why not embrace it? It seems like it's going to be a little bit of a gaudy eyesore, but they seem to like that. I do think it's weird in like the sort of PC cancel culture world that we live that somehow Gamecocks just sort of still sort of sail through all of this completely untouched. There's something about that that's always been kind of fascinating to me. But nonetheless, South Carolina embracing its mascot, building the full Gamecock statue out here in front of Williams-Brice Stadium. So do with that what you will, I guess. One more. Actually, we'll do two quick things here. It's part of our SEC through. So people know I'm a Gator hater, so they send me like Gator stuff all the time. So I've had people tell me recently about being Gator hunters, that it's not easy to get a license to Gator hunt, but some people do have them. Okefenokee Swamp, places like that. You can do some Gator hunting. And I got a guy that sent me a photo the other day of a couple gators that he had bagged, or someone in his family had bagged, and that they had some Georgia duct tape, and they like wrapped the gator mouth in duct tape. Podcast radio, you have to take my word for this video. I'll show it to you. First of all, I have heard about how gator hunting goes. Do you know that you have to, some of you may be more experienced in this than I am, but you have to stab the gator, bring it closer, and then when you bring it closer, that's when you shoot it. But if you fall in the boat, the gator gets you. Like, this is like a very serious thing to be doing. But this guy, Jet Python on Twitter, sent this to me. He bagged a couple gators, taped them up with the Georgia duct tape. And I said on Twitter, I said, if we could just put some of that same duct tape on Dan Mullen's mouth, the other gator with the big mouth. And our buddy Mad Dog 19 on Twitter sent me the photo of Dan Mullen with the gator, with the Georgia duct tape over his mouth. So good job by Jet Python and his family bagging some gators there in a local swamp. And a nice job by Mad Dog getting the Dan Mullen thing going there too. That's pretty fun stuff. Very quickly here before we wrap up our SEC through, let me also mention, this is not SEC related, but we got our first Power 5 game of the year tonight. Miami against UAB. Some of the chatter coming out of Birmingham is that the Blazers are going to have a couple of players missing from this game, COVID related. Not starters. Bill Clark, the coach, hasn't been more specific really, but it sounds like a couple of the Blazers not going to be playing. I also think with Derrick King in Miami, you know, this is one of those situations of the ACC as a league has a chance to be slightly better this year. King on a national showcase tonight could put some of that on display. The truth is UAB last couple of years has not been a bad team. I mentioned Bill Clark. I think he's one of the top, you know, defensive coaches in our sport. If you told me that Georgia had an opening at defensive coordinator, Dan Lanning became a head coach somewhere, if I could choose one of the two head coaches from this game to be my defensive coordinator, Manny Diaz at Miami, Bill Clark at UAB, there's a chance I may take Clark as a sharp defensive coordinator if I had the choice between the two, even giving Diaz recruiting chops. That's how much I respect Bill Clark. So if Derrick King has a big night tonight, that's a pretty big statement about what he might be able to do against ACC competition this fall. So if you're watching NFL, Chiefs, and Texans, a chance to also kind of check in on some college football tonight. We'll make that your SEC through. And here on Dog Nation Daily, it's time now for our Kroger Fresh Take. You know, Kroger is fresh for everyone. And on our show each and every week, they also offer the Fresh Take, too, with a look at everything that's going on with UGA Athletics. And I mentioned the NFL game that's coming up tonight between the Kansas City Chiefs and the Houston Texans. When I think about the Chiefs, I obviously think about Mecole Hardman. What's interesting is Hardman never had a, you know, what you think of as like statistically dominant season for Georgia. Never a 1,000-yard receiver, never one of the top, you know, receivers in the SEC, but he still stands as a huge fan favorite. And he's one of the most popular players now in the NFL as well, certainly among Georgia fans. And if you had to ask, well, why is that? Why is Hardman so popular? Why was he viewed as such a catalyst on the 2018 offense, things like that? I think one of the words you keep gravitating back towards is the word exciting. Mecole Hardman was just an exciting player. He was a very exciting rookie for the Chiefs, had a very exciting career for Georgia after kind of moving to the offensive side of the ball in 2017. And with Hardman no longer here, I do think there's this desire to see someone step up and take on that mantle of excitement the way that Mecole Hardman once provided that for Georgia. I also, kind of keeping that theme in mind, noticed this past week ESPN.com rated the most exciting teams in college football. Alabama and Clemson were the two top teams on that list. Georgia came in at number four on that list as the fourth most exciting team in college football. And some people would say, I don't care about being exciting, I just want to win. But when you think about what LSU did a year ago, clearly a very exciting team that used that excitement to the tune of producing wins, and the fact that, you know, teams like Alabama and Clemson are kind of, you know, near the top of that list there as well, it almost is true that if you wanted a snapshot of just how successful a team like Georgia is, maybe the stat sheet doesn't tell you the entire story. Maybe some of this can be told by the highlight reel as well. How many big plays are you producing offensively? And it's not just offensively, defensively as well. Are you stepping up and having guys get those sacks and having guys get those tackles for loss? Mecole Hardman shows you how much fun it is when Georgia has a truly exciting player. He's doing that now in the NFL. And in his wake, the opportunity to step up and also be exciting for Georgia, I think that search is still ongoing on both sides of the ball. But maybe in a couple of weeks, we'll start to get some answers to some of those questions. And that is our Kroger Fresh Take. It's brought to you by Kroger. And by the way, speaking of our friends at Kroger, don't take risks when you head towards the upcoming flu season. Go ahead and get your flu shot today. Kroger's going to be hosting three drive-through flu vaccination events during the month of September. The first one takes place Wednesday, September 16th at North Point Community Church in Alpharetta. It's 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. The second and third ones are both on Wednesday, September 23rd at two different locations, Gwinnett Church, Hamilton Mill in Beaufort, also Elizabeth Baptist Church in Atlanta. Same times as well, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. So for more information on the free Kroger drive-through flu vaccination events, go to the Dog Nation homepage. Look for Kroger up there. Check that out up there at the top of the page. You can get in. As you head towards the flu season, very important to make sure you're prepared for that. That Kroger vaccination, a good way to do all of that. Something else that's good to do on the way out the door here, how about our Gator Hater Updater? Let's give you that number, 1,412 days. Y'all have a good day. We'll see you tomorrow, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Merriweather and Tharp.